Soul. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards, the Authors on Fire podcast. I am Pat Rulo, and I'm so happy to share a recent Firebird Book Award winner with you, Dr. Pietro Garbelli, and the winning book is titled The Doctor's Voice: Empowering Solutions to a Physician's Frustrations, Burnout, and Healthcare Inefficiencies. Dr. Garbelli is a specialist in acute internal medicine, a clinical director, and a thriving healthcare consultant. Having witnessed and experienced inefficiencies, frustrations, and struggles as a patient, a relative, and a provider, he uses the lessons learned as a powerful catalyst to provide medical thought leadership. By fostering a successful collaboration between empowered physicians and healthcare stakeholders, he aims to contribute toward creating high quality and sustainable healthcare. And this conversation will barely touch the surface, but it's right up my alley, so let's get to it. Welcome, Dr. Pietro Garbelli.
Hi, thank you for having me, Pat. It's my pleasure to be on your podcast.
It is so my pleasure. You have no idea. And I want to congratulate you on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Thank you. It's really an honor to be selected as the winner.
Well, I see from social media, though, you're on a roll with these awards.
Yes, indeed. I had a few awards that I hadn't shared about yet. Mm-hmm. Accumulated over the last few months. And now that I'm on holiday, I have some time in my hands. I could finally put together some social media posts, and that's why they came all out at the same time.
Actually, that's a great strategy. Oh my gosh, we've got to look at this book, don't we?
Every day there is a new one.
I loved it. All righty, before we get into your book, I'm wondering, what made you write it? Was there a moment or a specific event, or what caused you to finally say, I've got to put pen to paper or fingers to computer?
It didn't happen overnight. I didn't wake up one day thinking, I have a book to write. It took a few months to figure out what to do with my frustrations. I had been working with a professional business coach for a few years and trying to understand what to do besides my career in acute medicine. And I had accumulated so much anger and frustrations and desire to change things and make the healthcare system a bit better for us that work in it and for the patients that use it. And the book was suggested initially by my coach, and I resisted the idea. At the beginning, I didn't really think I had anything special to say. I thought, I'm not that smart. I don't have any new research to share. You know, the usual things that we believe self-sabotage in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And eventually, he helped me to go through all the learning that I had as a result of all the experiences and frustrations over the years. And bit by bit, the framework of this book came up. An idea to share my learning, but also offer a learning to a wider audience, not only for fellow physicians, but also for decision makers in healthcare, politicians, people that can really influence the way healthcare change can be done rapidly or painfully slow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really does need to start higher than even the doctor or even the hospital level, because they're just working within the framework that they are given. And I can see how that is often extremely frustrating. Your coach, I can't recall the name, but I think he also won a Firebird Book Award for his book. Am I right?
Yes, he has. Yeah, his name is Tony J. Felipe.
Yes. Oh, that was so good that you decided to work with a coach who could help bring all of this out.
Yeah, definitely. After a while, I thought, why not? Mm-hmm. It's something that a lot of entrepreneurs and people working in so many other different areas make use of. And in medicine, we're on certain things are a little bit slow uptakers. We are very fast with scientific innovation, but when it comes to changing the way we work or asking for help, we are sometimes the last ones to do it.
Yes, I understand that. So the title, The Doctor's Voice, why that title?
Because I couldn't help noticing that it's very similar to the title of your book, Speak Up, Be Heard, that's the message. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was all about igniting the leadership skills and the desire to help and influence and work together with everyone in our organizations to make things better. Mm-hmm. I was coming towards the end of a long period of my professional life where I didn't feel heard. I was constantly trying to reach out and remind people about all the things that I noticed that didn't work and that were dysfunctional. And I was so frustrated that nothing changed. I felt like I didn't have a voice, and that's where the inspiration for the title came from.
When I saw the title, I really appreciated it because often we are focused on the patient voice and allowing the patient to feel empowered, but we seldom turn that around and think about the doctor or the doctor having a voice. So just right off the bat, the title grabbed me. And then your tagline, mm-hmm. purposefully transforming healthcare.
Yes. And the purpose for me is to make it sustainable and positive for everyone, for the people that work in it, that sometimes we don't see the struggles they go through, for the people that use them, and for the ones that regulate it and pay for it. And not to forget about ecological sustainability. But, you know, I have experienced healthcare very often as a user, as a carer, through my elderly parents. And I know what it feels like when you don't have a voice, when you want to speak up and be heard and make people realize that this isn't working. And there are strategies to be heard. I had to learn them myself and then share them with everyone through my book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Maybe give us a peek into the book. Give us a look just to give our readers an idea of what they might expect when they get a copy.
Yeah, it's... How can I say? It's a little bit of a journey in the struggles of a doctor, the things that happen behind the scenes that sometimes people are not aware of because we hide them so well. sometimes you will find a tired, exhausted, angry doctor that will start moaning about something that isn't working on that particular day. But normally we try to keep professional and everything seems so smooth. But there are a lot of problems that we share with the corporate world. But there are some problems that are specific to healthcare. For example, I share our struggles into using software systems that are not optimized with out-of-date hardware, having to go through lots of different hurdles, simply to put through a request and then get a result, connect with the patient data. There is so much that slows us down. And when you go through that again and again, every day, repeatedly, with each patient you see, I think it's not a surprise that a lot of colleagues suffer with burnout. It is one of the biggest epidemies of the modern medical world. And I wanted to offer some solutions to it, both solutions that we can take as individuals, as doctors, and solutions that can be implemented by the organization, by the healthcare system, and a national level and international level too. So I included those suggestions in each chapter. Each chapter looks after a different set of problems, a different theme, and the solutions are included in the chapter and at the end of it.
The daily process or per patient process is so difficult that I'm sure it not only takes a toll on the provider, but by the time they reach the patient, it takes a toll on the patient as well, because you now have a provider who is just no longer empathetic or caring because they're all wrapped up in that process of just even reaching the patient.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that every day. I see it even observing myself, thinking about how the physicians that I interacted with when I was younger behaved differently. It's not uncommon now to come into an office visit and having your doctor typing away on a computer and not even looking at you after the first few seconds. And it's not because they are rude or they forgot how to be empathetic. It's because they are overburdened with a lot of systems that don't really help, and they're trying to optimize the time that they have available to do the things that are required. So sometimes we concentrate so much on the technicality of being a doctor. We concentrate on, okay, I need to give you a good diagnosis, request the tests that you need, prescribe what you need. Everything else is a plus. Everything else is extra. And as users, as patients, we don't perceive that as extra. We perceive that as an integral part of caring. And sometimes when it's not there, it does affect our trust, our relationship with the doctor.
For sure. I've had a couple of different instances, one in which the doctor apologized for having to turn away so that he could type while I was speaking of and trying to share my diagnosis, which I thought was nice. And then I had another situation where the physician had an assistant typing so that he could actually sit there and look at me. And that I appreciate so much, because there's so much diagnostic value in looking at another person when they're trying to share their pain and the journey that they've gone through. Just the body language or their eyes or their movements or the way they voice their words totally gets lost if they're typing away. So something as simple as having somebody else.
I completely agree. And sometimes it's as simple as having the time that it takes to talk to someone and having time to listen to their concerns. But if the time is limited because we are so overburdened and stretched, then sometimes we have to cut people short.
Yes.
And there is a real problem that we might miss important information as well. And not only the interaction is unpleasant, it's also an added risk, because you might have so much more things to share that will help me being guided towards the right diagnosis, the right track. And if I don't have time to listen to you, I will never get there. Or I might get there eventually after two or three visits and a lot of scans and tests.
Yes, that's very sad that we've got misdiagnoses, because the process is built in such a way where, the first time they can't sit and pay attention. I'm sure that's extremely frustrating to the provider as well. There's got to be some kind of a solution to this, because it's bad healthcare. I mean, if somebody has to come in three and four times for a diagnosis, what's the point?
Yeah, and in fact, I'm currently writing a follow-up book on mainly on the future of healthcare, looking at different approaches and solutions that we can implement to address some of these problems. And for example, a problem that you mentioned, having an assistant, for a lot of us is luxury. I work in a publicly funded healthcare system in the UK, and I can tell you we work at full speed. And sometimes our assistants are our junior doctors, our doctors in training. Unfortunately, they have to take on that role. And regardless, we are so stretched when it comes to time that it's not really a deal. But there is already technology available that can simplify some of those administrative tasks. And with the advent of AI and robotics in the future, a lot of those things will become easier.
Like even recording, having a recording of the patient and then transcribing it to text or however they want to do that, freeing the doctor to actually have a one-on-one.
Yeah, and there is technology already available to do that, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to office visits.
Right.
A little bit similar to having a Google or an Alexa listening
right.
to a conversation and taking notes and preparing the records. It is already existing. We just need to start implementing it and being aware of all the implications and pitfalls. And that's why I'm writing a book about it.
Wow. I'm sure there's HIPAA issues surrounding that.
Well, totally. There's a lot of potential risks and pitfalls around security
yes.
and data sharing and privacy and so on. And some risks and some regulations that need to be put in place. Otherwise, there will be a very limited uptake.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wow. Thinking about COVID, post-COVID, are the problems post-COVID, are they new problems or are they old ones that are just magnified due to slim staff and those type of things?
I think it's a mixed bag. There was definitely an amplification of a lot of existing problems that came to the surface. We had to also divert a lot of resources to dealing with people suffering with COVID, and a lot of other things were put aside for a long time. So, for example, in many healthcare systems, we are just about to recover from a backlog of specialist visits and tests and procedures that took a lot longer than expected to deal with. But also there were a lot of new problems that we were not aware of, and a lot of problems just during the management of the pandemic came to surface. For example, when it comes to not listening to the voice of doctors, I found myself many times trying to argue with people about the way we were asked to work. Very often, some rules and regulations that kept changing didn't make any sense from a clinical point of view. A lot of assumptions at the beginning on how disease is transmitted and how we're meant to behave, whether to wear a mask or not wear a mask in public. A lot of rules came and went very rapidly. They didn't make any sense, mm-hmm. and nobody listened to us because we were not the experts.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, it was very frustrating.
Oh, I can imagine the 6-foot rule that came from nowhere and, yeah, all kind of random parts and pieces
yeah.
that don't make sense.
At the beginning, everyone was obsessed about cleaning surfaces, and that nobody cared if you were coughing
mm-hmm.
or being close to another person. I think it just showed a lot of other problems that we have in healthcare and when it comes to public healthcare as well.
Right. At first, when it came about, I thought, well, one advantage of this is going to maybe be improved infection control, because maybe people will be thinking a little bit more about it and not shaking hands
mm-hmm.
and those type of things. I think it has kind of slipped back. I was just at a doctor's office the other day, and I love how they put the hand sanitizer on and then open up all the drawers to get the needles, their gloves out. And by that time, their hands are contaminated. So I think it's kind of gone back to the old comfortable way.
Oh, yes, completely. And also when it comes to, for example, public transport, I commute every day to work, and I can tell you people no longer care about coughing in your face without even realizing that they might be spreading some disease. We've gone backwards very, very quickly.
Yes, yes. Very, very interesting times for healthcare, for sure.
Yeah, it was really, really challenging. Mm-hmm. On one side, we felt useful.
Yes.
We appreciated being also finally seen as important people that add value, that do a job that makes a difference. You know, sometimes we feel a little bit neglected, especially in certain countries where remuneration is not that good.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get paid that well, and sometimes we feel, okay, who's looking after the doctors and the nurses and everyone else in healthcare? And for several months, all the attention was on us, and people were clapping, and there was so much gratitude. But at the same time, at the very beginning of the pandemic, we were very often treated a little bit like cannon fodder. We were just asked to go to work and come back to work as soon as we recover from COVID, and just work night shifts, day shifts. Everyone was being really dedicated, but sometimes we felt very exposed. Coming back to the rules, when we ran out of PPE, big thing in the news. We were told from one day to the other, basically, that we didn't need it, and we started falling sick. That was clearly, it wasn't a decision that probably needed to be made, because there honestly was no availability. Nobody had prepared to have a stock of that personal protective equipment.
Right.
But at the same time, being told there's no need was just a lie.
Yes.
We saw the effect of that.
Well, yeah. And to say that to people who have studied medicine, that all of a sudden there's no need, I mean, you couldn't be expected to even buy into that.
Yeah, exactly. And for example, being told, "Oh, you don't need to use FP2 or FP3 mask because there's no evidence." You know, sometimes this phrase is used misused very often in healthcare. Sometimes "there's no evidence" means that nobody has had time or investment or resources to find the evidence, but it can be absolutely obvious because we have knowledge about diseases and viruses and so much knowledge that we can use. But sometimes if we want to manipulate a situation, people use the "there is no evidence" weapon to just shut you up.
So burnout was always a problem, but I'm assuming it to a peak during the pandemic. Is that lessening? Mm-hmm. Are you finding people coming back, or where are we now? And what does the future look like?
I think it has changed over time. I think burnout, at least my experience, was that there are different triggers to burnout and different types of burnout. Some people find themselves burnt out because there is, for example, they are in professions or in jobs where there is so much exposure to human suffering and the need for always having compassion and tolerance and being empathetic. And that's something that probably exploded during COVID, especially with the first wave, when a lot of people were dying, and they were away from their families, and we were the only ones witnessing all this human suffering. Mm-hmm. But there's also another type of burnout that is more pervasive, that is caused by all the frustrations, all the dysfunctions, all the nonsense, the bureaucracy, that is probably more creeping because it's insidious. It creeps under your skin and changes the way you think, the way you behave, the way you are with other people. And that type of burnout, I see, we haven't recovered from. Sometimes it's getting worse because sometimes providers carelessly try to implement some change that makes it even worse, and sometimes we don't have a voice, or at least we're not involved during the early phases of change, when we can say, wait a moment, have you thought about the implications, how that is going to affect me as a doctor, how it is going to affect the patient and our relationship and everything else.
I hadn't really thought about different levels of burnout, but that's interesting. That makes sense. It makes me think of also, I've heard from so many nurses specifically, just the alarm fatigue, where you constantly have everything beeping and going off, and how that just affects you, your nerves, and just to burn out from hearing all of that clatter all of the time.
Yeah, I suffer with that every day at work. Mm-hmm. I spend most of my time in the emergency department. And sometimes it just comes with, again, not involving the users into buying and choosing the technology or deciding how to set it up. Mm-hmm. And things can be done differently. For example, I visited a couple of years ago a hospital in Germany where they had thought about this, and they had created a completely different environment that was very relaxing and helped people to concentrate and think. For example, instead of having alarms that were going off for simple things like an infusion that has come to an end, or a patient needing some personal care, the nurses were carrying some buzzers in their pocket that were vibrating like a normal smartphone. So it didn't create any noise. It didn't distract and interrupt anyone else. Right. So the technology is available. We're just nobody thinks about the impact when it comes to making a decision to purchase one product or another.
That is stunning. If you're running a hospital or healthcare facility, your primary concern should be the people who are caring for the patients. You need them. Otherwise, you don't have a you don't have a hospital. You don't have a facility, and you would think you would do everything you could to make it easy for them. Wow.
Yeah, and in fact, we are at the cusp of the crisis of retention. A lot of doctors are choosing to leave the profession or cut down their hours, go part-time, migrate to other countries where the working conditions are better. It is becoming a problem. And I agree with you, without doctors and nurses, there is no healthcare.
Exactly.
So we need to think about us.
Right, exactly. I think that patients can help in a way. You know, people, patients, we have this reverence for doctors and nurses, and we put them on a pedestal, but we fail to remember that they are just people doing their jobs. And going back to what we said before, we often ask of our providers that they show empathy and warmth toward us as patients. But I've found through experience that a patient can really turn a typical rushed, kind of a cold doctor-patient relationship into something real if you surprise the doctor or nurse by asking them questions about themselves, kind of almost turning the conversation table a bit. So instead of putting them in control, you as the patient can at least initially take control of the conversation. And when they come in and just say, hey, how is your day going? You know, have you had a chance to enjoy this lovely weather outside? And just this tiny little mini relationship where just right off the bat, they know that you are a human and you realize that they are too. And I'm thinking that could change the trajectory of that whole short office visit.
It does open doors. Mm-hmm. You think about also many patients have lots of influence on hospitals. They might be sitting in a patient involvement group. They might be sitting in the trust board as patient representatives. So hearing the struggles of the providers has a lot of power, because you might be able to change things for the better. Mm-hmm.
And if even you can't change it on a grand scale, just for a moment, you could let that provider know that you appreciate them and you understand that they're going through a difficult day. And just that little tiny human connection, I think, can make a difference in someone's day.
We all need that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think patients need to remember that.
A bit of human touch goes a long way.
It sure does. It really does. Everyone needs to just get a little bit softer here. All right. I was going to ask what's next, but you already said you're working on the next book to this. When
another book.
Yeah. When do you think that's going to be available?
I'm planning to get it published at the beginning of next year, ideally. At the moment, I'm in the writing phase. Then I will go through the publishing hurdle, the editing, and so on, to be ready for the beginning of next year.
Excellent. Are your readers mostly physicians? Who are you finding as your demographic reader?
Oh, that's a very good question. To be honest, I don't know. It's really difficult to know who's buying or not buying my book. I know the majority are people that are connected to healthcare.
Sure.
But I was looking at some feedback on Amazon, and lots of people that left a review explicitly said that they don't work in healthcare, but the book opened their eyes and they learned so much, and they were recommending it to friends and family that work in healthcare. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see how there is something in it for everyone. Mm-hmm. After all, I believe we all are users of healthcare. Even if we don't work in it, we're interested in having access to good healthcare. So it's in everybody's interest, after all.
For sure, for sure. Well, as soon as somebody has a healthcare encounter, whether it's themselves or a family member, I think then they become part of the process where they want to understand it further, whether they had a good experience or a bad. But as soon as you have that healthcare encounter, you kind of understand a little bit as to what's going on. And so I could see how both sides would be very, very interested in your book. Wow, I'm so excited to have this opportunity to talk with you. There's so much more I want to talk about, but we'll begin to wrap up, and I want to make sure I didn't miss anything that you wanted to highlight.
Well, maybe just wanted to add one thing, that besides having released this book, I'm providing my services, consulting healthcare providers, so anyone that is struggling and needs a little bit of thought leadership, a bit of involvement of the medical workforce in projects that they're doing, I am available. My website is drgarbelli.com, very easy to remember, and you find a lot of information about what I do, and you can purchase my book, find copies of the book there. And there's a bit of official merchandise as well that I have left over from the book launch that I'm sending with the books and selling separately. And you can book me directly from the website for a remote consultation, or send me an email.
Excellent. Yes, I saw that you consult with physicians, and I think that's just a logical step here. And I'm sure there's great value that you can add to someone who is just struggling and there's no one else to speak with. So I'm happy that you're offering that service as well. Alrighty, we are speaking with Dr. Pietro Garbelli. The title of the book is The Doctor's Voice, Empowering Solutions to Physicians' Frustrations, Burnout, and Healthcare Inefficiencies. And wow, after this conversation, I am sure folks are going to head over and get copies of your book at Amazon. Your website is drgarbelli.com. Thank you. Thank you so, so much for entering the Firebird Book Awards, for having this conversation with me, and for doing all of the good work you do to help.
Thank you so much, Pat. I'm very grateful for your help. It's been an absolute pleasure.